Welcome to this episode of Drive with Woody Fit. I'm your host, Nate Woods. Thank you for joining me. I really appreciate that you are here. In this episode, I talk about Bang Energy Drink. What the heck is it? Bicep tendonitis. I screwed myself up, guys. And now I gotta fix myself, and it sucks. It sucks being broken. I hate it. The best way to train for continual gains, for continual muscle gains, continual fat loss gains, get all the gains training this way. What is it? Listen in to find out. If you have flat feet, how do we fix it? How do we diagnose it? How do we figure it out? We will go over that. Then I answer a couple questions, one from Steven, and Steven's question is my opinion on SARMs. If you don't know what a SARM is, listen in, because it's this. I kind of go on a little bit of a rant at the end of that question. And then the second question is, Connor, how often should I train my abs if I'm trying to tone and lose weight in my core? This is a big question. Probably one of the biggest questions that I get from beginners and women generally, because women seem to be very concerned with their core. So thanks for listening to this episode. I really appreciate that you're here. If you like the show, if you like what we're doing, share. Share on social media. Share with a friend. Share with a family member. Share with somebody. And I say this at the end, but Megan and Michael will be on the next episode of Drive with Woody Fit. They've been at school. They've been like really busy with just finishing school and getting all that work done. So I promise. Some of you guys have been asking me, like, where's Megan and Michael? They will be back next episode. I promise. I shouldn't say promise. I hope I don't have to put my foot in my mouth for that. But Megan and Michael will be back on the next episode. And without further ado, let's get into this episode of Drive with Woody Fit, episode, I think it's 45 or 46. Let's get into it. I hope your guys' pre-holiday week is going better than mine. It has been absolutely insane here, just with getting all the Christmas stuff ready and just preparing for all the visiting and the families and finishing out work and, you know, trying to continue to make content. It's been rough. And then on top of that, dealing with not feeling 100%, it's been a lot. So, and one of the things that I'm, you know, currently dealing with right now is some bicep tendonitis. Now, this is new to me. This is my first like real self-diagnosis, like kind of chronic type injury where it's not acute and like you know exactly what happened. This is my first like, oh, this has been bothering me for a little bit. What could it be? And then spending the time to look into it and figure it out, you know, what possibly could it be? So the first thing that really brought it to my attention was, of course, I was having this pain, right? So when I did internal rotation, mostly, if I did some like internal rotation with a resistance band with my right arm, I would feel this deep pain right on the outside of my shoulder. And I'm thinking, okay, like, you know, I have a slightly torn rotator cuff or something. So I went and got some soft tissue therapy done. And Shira, my friend who I interviewed in a previous episode, like 2 or 3 episodes ago, she had done some soft tissue repair on me. And she had made a comment while I was there. She's like, oh, your biceps are really tight. So I was like, okay, like, I thought back to that, you know, she had said, like, oh, your biceps are really tight. So, like, okay, if my biceps are tight, then, you know, could it possibly be in the bicep tendon? Because I know, you know, the bicep attaches at the top of the shoulder, right? You have the two heads of the biceps. You have the short head and the long head. And the long head attaches at the top of the outside of the humerus. So, and the humerus is your bone, that bone in your upper arm, just in case you didn't know. So knowing this, and knowing where the pain is and what it feels like, I started to dig a little bit and come to find out that bicep tendonitis is mostly aggravated by overhead pressing, even doing that internal and external rotation, because as the tendon inflames, it'll rub over the bone, which then of course causes more pain. And I, what really like was the catalyst to me, like going and researching it, was on one of my training days, I finished off the workout with some shoulder presses. I think I posted on my personal Instagram about it, but I finished off my workout with some overhead presses, and it really, really bothered me because, you know, it hurt so bad I could hardly shoulder press 95 pounds. And I don't have a massive, you know, a really strong overhead press, but it was very difficult just to put up 95 pounds. So I'm like, okay, I need to fix something. So I put together a little protocol of what I'm going to do to kind of help to rehab this bicep tendonitis. And I'm going to start by sharing it with you guys. I want you to, kind of see like my process of figuring things out and how I went about putting this all together. But, you know, the first step is going to be to reduce the inflammation. So, you could take ibuprofen or Tylenol or Aleve, and yeah, it's going to reduce inflammation, but those are terrible for your gut. They're terrible for your liver. So I'm taking a more natural method, I guess you could say. First, I'm going to supplement with CBD when necessary. That's going to be my staple, anti-inflammatory. Now, I do not really believe in just like continuing to supplement just to take away the pain. I will deal with pain here and there, but if it gets bad, that's when I'm going to start to supplement regularly with the CBD and use it as needed. Then the next thing I'm going to do is drink the Organifi Gold Juice, the reishi and turmeric infused nighttime tea to help relax you, and it's chock full of anti-inflammatories from from the turmeric. And then I'm going to continue to take reishi mushroom extract just for overall health. Now, the second thing that I'm going to have to do is improve my range of motion, right? So, not only is my bicep tendon inflamed, but I have limited, I wouldn't say I have limited range of motion in my shoulder. My shoulders have not been centrated for a long time. And when your shoulders are out of centration, it means they're not staying in the shoulder socket. They'll move back and forth during certain movements. And then the muscle can rub over top of the bone, just like the bicep, the bicep tendon, the long head bicep tendon, is rubbing over the bone, causing it to continue to be inflamed. So some of the things that I'm going to do to help improve my mobility and my flexibility and my range of motion in the shoulders is, first thing is going to be dead hangs. So just hanging from a pull-up bar, and having that downward force of pulling to kind of just straighten out everything a little bit. I've heard and read that dead hangs help to relieve the pain of bicep tendonitis. So that's why that's number one. Then number two, I'm going to do a doorway chest stretch. Now, if you have a tight chest, this can pull your shoulders forward. So I want to make sure that I'm continually stretching my chest to make sure that it doesn't get overly tight and overactive. And these things are going to be done daily. And then the last thing I'm going to do is to foam roll the upper back, just to kind of help to stay on top of. I mean, also the fact that I'm training, I'm deadlifting 3 times a week right now. So I'm putting a lot of strain on my upper back, my lower back, my legs. It's just a lot of strain overall. So I want to make sure that I stay limber and, not get overly tight anywhere. And then the third step is really to just improve strength and strength and stability. Using a resistance band to do external rotation, inverted or TRX rows, which these are pretty much going to be done seated cable rows when I'm at home. And then a box crawl where you're crawling on your hands and your feet in a box shape. You're crawling in a square. And that's going to help to kind of improve the ability for your shoulders to stabilize. And then lastly is going to be Turkish get-ups. And all of these exercises are going to be done weekly, 2 to 3 times a week. And the Turkish get-ups will really help with kind of recentering that shoulder back in the socket, as well as some other things. It has other benefits too. I did about 5 Turkish get-ups at the end of my workout today, which was this. I went through, dead hangs and stretching and rehab. And then I finished off with 5 Turkish get-ups with just a 10-pound dumbbell. And man, I actually almost broke a sweat from it. And it was literally just 10-pound, it was a 10-pound dumbbell I was doing these Turkish get-ups with. So, don't underestimate the power of Turkish get-ups and different ways to improve your mobility and improve your flexibility. They really do work, and they work well. Now that I've got way off track, and just decided to go off the whim and start talking about what I'm doing. I want to kind of switch gears and bring it back in and have and talk about a conversation that I had with a friend of mine. Okay, now I don't want to call this person out because I don't want to say they're doing anything wrong. I don't want to offend anybody in a society in a time where people are so easily offended. But this person that I was talking to, I was asking them, you know, do you drink coffee? For whatever reason, and I was going to recommend a certain coffee to them that I personally love. And they said no, you know, they don't drink coffee, but caffeine is really sensitive to them. And I said, okay, well, you know, like, do you drink anything in the morning? Because it's very routine and for us to get up and have, you know, coffee or tea or something in the morning. And I'm kind of prodding at this person because I want to help them a little bit. And I want to know, like, what's going on. And this person told me that they have this drink called Bang. And they had sent me a picture of it. And I'm like, oh, geez, this looks like an energy drink. Like, what is going on? And I've never had Bang before, so I started to do my research. Come to find out that Bang has about 300 milligrams of caffeine in it. And this person said that they didn't drink coffee because they're very sensitive to caffeine, but they said they drink one of these every day, and then they're good. It wakes them right up. Well, of course it wakes you right up. It's 300 milligrams of caffeine in it. That's a lot. Now, I'll give it the credit that it doesn't have sugar. You know, there's no sugar in it, but it does have sucraline brand sucralose. Now, I went to look up. Now, sucraline is the name of a company, right? Sucraline is a brand that makes sucralose. And sucralose is bad. And I know I've talked about this before, but sucralose is not good. So I went to do some research on sucraline, and I could not find anything about the sucraline brand. It was kind of sketchy to me, and I didn't get really a good feeling about it, but I couldn't find any studies or like how it's processed and how it's made or anything like that, where it's even made. So I didn't really get a good feeling about that. It didn't give me the butterflies and rainbows in my stomach, you know. But it does have this particular energy drink does have 300 milligrams of caffeine per can. And one can is one serving. It's like a Monster can, you know, or like a large Red Bull can. It's like, you know, a larger soda can, basically. And so they market this energy drink as being healthy because they throw this extra shit in that doesn't necessarily have to be there, nor, you know, not that it's not doing anything, but, you know, combining these supplements that you could take, you know, on their own, exogenously, by themselves with sucralose, which is terrible for you, absolutely terrible for you. You know, that combination kind of like cancels themselves out, in my opinion. You know, so the first thing that they throw in here is branched chain amino acids. And of course, this is a big, like muscle building, what's the term I'm looking for? This is a big, like, oh, you got to drink your BCAAs. It's a big bodybuilder thing. Like, bodybuilders, like, you got to take your BCAAs when you're cutting so you don't lose any muscle mass. And, you know, I understand that the concept behind that, but they're using, I believe they're using this as just a way to market, to say, like, oh, look, we have branched chain amino acids in it. It's kind of good for you. And I've said this before, too, that if you're going to take amino acids, you're better off taking an essential amino acid mix. Because when you drink, you know, branched chain amino acids are just four of the branched chain amino acids. Well, there are nine different amino acids that all play a very important role in protein synthesis in the body. And if you only consume the branched chain amino acids, you're missing out on five other amino acids that your body needs. Now, that's like saying, you know, go build a car and all you have is an engine and a steering wheel, and that's the only thing you can use to build this car. But you just can't do it. I mean, you have no wheels, you have no chassis, you know, you have no seats. So you're much better off if you're going to supplement with branched chain amino acids. You're much better off supplementing with an essential amino acid mix. That being said, the next thing that they throw in here is called super creatine. Now, in all of my research, I have not found another form of creatine called super creatine. And of course, this is just a marketing ploy. They just want it to look and sound super cool. Now, the creatine that they use is a creatine molecule and glutamine molecule attached. And now, this does not necessarily happen in nature. And it really seems to me like they only did it to appeal to somewhat health-savvy individuals. People that know that, like, they should be taking creatine or that they do take creatine. Like, oh, look, it's combined with L-glutamine. This makes it even better. Well, not necessarily. Are there any studies backing that up? You know, I couldn't find anything about combining creatine and glutamine and the fact that they would interact with each other or benefit you in a better way. You could take creatine and you could take glutamine, and they're both going to interact the way that they interact in the body. They don't have to be taken combined in one molecule. Anyway, the last thing that they market, that they put in here is CoQ10. Now, CoQ10 is coenzyme Q10, and it's used by the mitochondria to generate ATP. Now, like I've talked about before, ATP is adenine triphosphate, and it's what your muscles need to contract, right? Your body uses ATP to release energy so that you can flex your muscles, you can deadlift, you can run, you can lift, you can anything. Anything that requires energy to be used, your body is using ATP to do it. So by supplementing with coenzyme Q10, it'll boost your energy and your stamina because the mitochondria, of course, using that to create more ATP. It supports cognitive function. It also fights free radical damage, and it supports healthy vision and hearing, as well as improving your oral health. Now, I really have started to see, the more and more that I learn, the more and more I'm seeing these companies are now putting these health supplements in their products to make it seem like they're super great. But what you need to be careful, and you need to be skeptical, because the supplement industry overall is very unregulated. The supplement industry does not fall under the same guidelines as like the food industry, okay? And if you notice on a lot of different supplements, it says, you know, this product is not intended to cure, treat, or prevent any disease, and it's not, you know, been verified by the FDA or whatever. So you need to be skeptical when you go, you know, when you supplement with something, because number one, you're going to get what you pay for. You know, supplement companies have found ways of taking shortcuts to make the manufacturing process easier so they do or don't have to do certain things. You know, in the end, these companies are out here to make a buck, right? And some, I don't want to point fingers here, but some companies don't care about taking advantage of your lack of knowledge or, you know, your ignorance or any of that just to make a buck because you're trying to be healthier and they just want to, that's what they're in. Like, they're in the industry to make money. So you need to be careful. You need to be skeptical. Unless they have a breakdown of exactly how much of this stuff they're putting in, you don't know exactly how much is in their products. You know, you could be getting hardly any branched-chain amino acids or hardly any super creatine in this stuff. Unless they break it down for you on the nutrition label, which is something you should look for, you have no idea how much of this stuff you're actually getting. You could be getting way too much for what you personally need. So you got to be careful. And if they don't specify how much of any substance is in it, chances are there's not that much, okay? A lot of times you'll see like in the nutrition fact or in the supplement facts on a supplement, you'll see like a blend and it'll have like 7 different ingredients, but it won't tell you. It'll just tell you how many milligrams or grams you get in one serving, but it doesn't break down exactly how many milligrams or grams of each ingredient in that blend is. So for example, if caffeine is the first ingredient and it says there's 15,000 milligrams total and there's 7 other ingredients, you don't know if you're getting, you know, 100 milligrams of caffeine or 600 milligrams of caffeine. You have no idea because they're not breaking it down for you. So this is why you need to be absolutely careful about, you know, what you're taking and, you know, mind you that a lot of the times we take supplements to fix imbalances in the body, to fix things in the body, to prevent certain things from happening. And that's great. And there's a lot of different supplements out there that will help you, you know, fix imbalances, like supplementing with iron, supplementing with, I don't know. I can't even think right now. It's been such a long day, but there's plenty of stuff out there that works good and actually will help you. But what it also comes down to is knowing what you're taking, because this person said, yeah, this is, I drink this because I'm really sensitive to caffeine. That's why I don't drink coffee. Well, honey, there's 300 milligrams of caffeine in this. You got to know what you're doing. Like, you got to know what you're taking. You drink this instead of coffee because you're sensitive to caffeine. This, you obviously had no idea how much of what, or even what was in this drink that you're drinking every day. So, you know, and this can cause issues for you, which eventually you're going to have to fix. You're going to have to fix down the road. And speaking of fixing issues, this issue is something that's been a part of my life personally. Not only my life, but my sister's life as well. And, you know, this article really does a good job of explaining it, and it's called What to Know About Flat Feet. And now, flat footedness is basically described as having a very low arch or no arch at all. Now, the arch of the foot provides spring to the step, okay? Not only that, but it distributes body weight across the feet and the legs, and a good arch also allows us to walk on a variety of surfaces effectively. You know, you can hike in the woods, or you can run on the beach, or you can walk on the boardwalk, or you can walk on cement or in the grass. And because you have a good arch, when you have a good arch, it's easier. What am I even saying? I'm making up words tonight. It's easier to walk on different grounds and different surfaces. So some of the things in our society now, a lot more people are developing flat feet. Now it can be passed down in genes, and that's I believe what had happened to my sister. She had unfortunately got that gene. You know, it can also be caused by weak arches, you know, not using your feet, there's over 100 bones. There's like 100 bones in the foot, and like over, maybe, no, there's 30 bones in the foot. There's 30 bones in, over like 30 bones, and right around 30, okay? We're going to go with that. There's about 30 bones in your foot, and there's over 100 muscles in your foot alone. 100 different muscles in your foot alone. And of course, when you don't use muscles, what happens to them? They atrophy. I said it right that time. They atrophy, okay? And then when they atrophy, this is what can happen. This, you know, you can develop these weak arches because you're not using the muscles in your feet. And when we wear the shoes with really good arch support, you know, and we don't have to use the muscles in our feet, it can cause those muscles to atrophy. Now, you know, injuries, you know, if you have a certain foot injury, you know, from whatever sport, you know, soccer or skateboarding or whatever, that can cause an arch to fall. If your Achilles tendon is damaged, or, you know, if that becomes injured or is not functioning properly, this can cause the arch to fall as well. And another thing called tarsal coalition. Now, tarsal coalition is when the feet bones fuse together during development, and this normally, well, probably only happens in children, when children are developing. Now, this can be corrected with surgery. This is not, you know, that's not like the end all be all, but I'm sure, you know, the doctors have to catch it fairly quickly so that they can fix it. Now, some of the symptoms of having a flat foot, the first off is just pain in the foot, right? A lot of times if you have flat feet, your feet will hurt a lot, right? Also, the feet can point outward, right? The feet will point outward, and the ankles will be rolled in a little bit, and this is called overpronation. I don't know if you've ever seen anybody who if you've seen them walk and their toes are pointed outward and their shoes are worn down more on the inside than they are on the outside of the foot, that's a sign that their arches have fallen, you know, because the ankle's rolled in. They've got this overpronation, and it's causing, of course, they wear the same pair of shoes long enough, it's going to cause the insides of those shoes to wear off more than the outsides. And if you even stand behind somebody like that and look at their heels, you'll see their feet almost like falling off the sole of the shoe. I've seen this all the time. It's crazy. You know, you can also have pain in the arch of your foot, your calf, your legs, your knees, your hip, even all the way up to your lower back. And this is what I found most interesting about the body. One of the things I found most interesting about the body is the fact that issues will travel through your kinetic chain. So, prime example, one of my clients had bad ankle mobility, and we're working on improving his ankle mobility. Simply having bad ankle mobility is preventing him from doing a full squat. Just the ankle mobility itself is preventing him from being able to do a full depth squat. Which is absolutely crazy because it's just your ankle. Like, you would never think, like, oh, it's just my ankle. No. Problems will travel through the kinetic chain. And not only that, not only dysfunction, but if you have an issue with your feet, like, walk around with one shoe on, one shoe off, and in a few days, you're going to have low back pain. I guarantee it, okay? Because these issues won't just stay local. They will travel throughout the body. Now, how do we fix this? Exercises to improve flexibility and strength in the feet. Now, these movements, these couple movements have been recommended by the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons. These guys know what they're talking about. And the first exercise is the Achilles tendon stretch. And it basically looks like a regular calf stretch, right? You could do it that way, or you could do it where how they suggest it, where you place your toes a few inches from a wall, which this is going to look like the ankle mobility test. Bend at the knee in an attempt to touch the knee to the wall, and you should feel a stretch in the back of the leg, in your calf and your Achilles tendon. And they say you want to hold this stretch for 30 seconds, rest for 30 seconds, and repeat 9 more times. Now, if you can do a regular calf stretch and feel a stretch in your Achilles, that's great. Okay, and if your Achilles is tight, this could be causing you some foot pain or some knee pain or dysfunction. Okay, the next thing that they say is a golf ball roll, and this is a good one. I really like this one because you sit in a chair, you place a golf ball under your feet, and you roll the arch of your foot back and forth for 2 minutes. And what this does is this stretches the plantar fascia ligament. Now, when it comes to using the golf ball to roll, what you're basically doing is foam rolling. Okay, you're stimulating those muscles and those tendons that haven't been stimulated, that don't get stimulated. You're kind of turning them back on a little bit, and you're correcting a problem. Okay, but what you don't want to do is put that golf ball underneath your foot and just ram it back and forth real quick. Okay, because once you start to do that, you kind of start to defeat the whole purpose of foam rolling and the self-myofascial release. So when you roll this golf ball under your foot back and forth, you want to do it slowly, you know, a nice slow deliberate movement back and forth all the way up to the ball of your foot and then all the way back to the heel, and do this for 2 minutes. And my recommendation would be you can do this up to 2 or 3 times a day, honestly. You know, and the most important thing is to do it regularly. You know, if you do this once a week, it may not help at all, but if you do this 2 times a day, you might see an improvement in a week's time. So it's really, really important, you know, not only to stay consistent with stuff, because consistency is king, but it's also really important to understand that problems can travel through the kinetic chain, and you got to prevent or fix those problems, you have to be well-rounded, and you have to make a good routine for yourself. Now, speaking of routines, I'm, like, doing pretty good with these transitions today. There's a lot of people will split up their exercises, split up their workouts as like a common bro split, right? Where you do like leg day, arm day, chest day, back day, etc. Now, this push-pull method may give you better results with just 4 days a week. And you might want to consider, if you're only working out 4 days a week, or if you're struggling to get to the gym, you know, 5-6 days a week, but 4 days you can do, even 2 days you can do. If you could do 2 to 4 days a week, then a push-pull method is going to be a very solid training protocol for you, okay? And the way that you would implement the push-pull method is you're basically splitting up your workouts into 2 days, all right? You're pushing movements and you're pulling movements, okay? Now, this does incorporate legs too. Don't worry. We're not neglecting legs here. We're not going to have chicken legs from doing this. So we're splitting our training sessions into two categories. It's either a push workout or it's a pull workout, okay? In your pushed workout, you're going to train muscles like your chest, your shoulders, your triceps, your quadriceps, which is the front of your leg, and your core, all right? And we're just going to do core on both days because having a strong core is super really important. Anyway, and then you're going to split the second day up into your pull day. And those exercises or the muscles you're going to work on those days is going to be your back, your biceps, your hamstrings, your glutes, and we'll say your core. You don't have to do your core, but it's important to train your core at least one of those 2 days. Now, a good example of exercises that you would do, if you were doing 4 days a week, you could do days 1 and 3 as push workouts, days 2 and 4 as pull workouts. Now, how would you split this up? What exercise are you going to do? Well, because we're training the entire body twice a week, you want to focus on your big compound movements. So on your push days, you'd really want to focus on your bench press, your shoulder press, your close grip bench press, your squats, your planks. Now, what I did here is I split up core. I did a core on push and core on pull days, but on push days, you're stabilizing. You're doing stabilizing core exercises, and then on pull days, you're doing full range of motion core exercises so that you can get the benefit of improving your core's ability to stabilize as well as growing and training those muscles through the full range of motion. Okay, let's get back on track. Then day 2 and 4 would be pull workouts, and you would do movements like your deadlifts, your rows, your pull-ups, your bicep curls, your hip thrusts, and then my abs example for that day would be Russian twists, because you're going through pretty much a solid range of motion for the obliques, and you're still stabilizing with the rectus abdominis, but you're still going through a decent range of motion. Now, there's some serious benefits to training in the push-pull manner. One of them is the fact that you're training your entire body twice per week. And this, in my opinion, does implement really good frequency. The fact that you can spend 4 days in the gym and train your entire body twice per week, this is for general population. You're just training to lose some weight, or you're training to be overall healthy and strong. You know, if you have a very specific goal, your training protocol is going to look much different. But if you're training to just, maybe you want to put on some muscle, you want to lose some fat, you want to be strong, you want to be healthy, this is going to be a solid way for you to train. Frequency is a lot more important than just slamming an area really hard once a week. You know, if you did, we're going to take squats, for example, okay? If you did squats for 15 sets per week, right? So you split up 15 sets over a week's time. This is going to elicit better results than squatting for 15 sets on Monday and then not squatting again until next Monday, right? If you did 15 sets of squats, that is a ton of volume, especially to do in a 1 hour workout. And if you do that in one workout and you use the proper weight, you know, because I could do 15 sets of squats with 95 pounds and yeah, I'd probably have a pretty decent pump going on in my legs, but it wouldn't really, really be all that challenging. Okay. So if you're doing 15 sets of squats at an appropriate weight that is challenging for you on one day, you're going to pay for it because I've done it. Trust me, it's not fun. So if you split those 15 sets up over the course of a week and you do, you know, 7 sets on your first day and then 8 sets on your second day, 6 sets of 8 or something, or 8 sets of 6 or whatever, you're going to get a much better result from splitting those sets up throughout the week and continually training than you will just doing it on one day. And the reason for this is because the reason for this is because, you know, you have growth hormone and testosterone that gets released, right? And your body, when you work out, then your body has to repair that muscle. And after 48 hours, the repair starts to slow down, right? That anabolic signal kind of starts to slow down. from that area that you trained. Now, if you take, and this is the concept between me behind me deadlifting three times a week. You know, I'm deadlifting on Monday, and then I'm coming right back around and deadlifting on Wednesday, and then right back around and deadlifting on Friday, and then using the weekend for some rehab and legs, and then right back at it the very next week. So I'm going a very short time. You know, I'm going 48 hours in between each of my deadlift sessions minus the weekend, okay? And what this is doing is basically continually sending that anabolic growth training adaptation signal to my body constantly. And not only am I sending that constantly, but if I train under a proper, with the proper weight, which I went way too heavy in week one and I'm paying for it now, but if you use the proper weight, following that concept, you know, your body can repair itself. You won't necessarily be sore the next time you come around to deadlift, and you're just going to elicit amazing results. And now when you do that, you have to implement the concept of, you have to adjust your intensity day over day. You know, Monday is 100% intensity for me, but Friday is about 45% intensity. So I'm not trying to do a 100% beast mode three times a week, because that's just how you burn yourself out and hurt yourself. But, you know, that is very important when you're splitting up your sets over the course of the week. And then not only is splitting up the sets going to be beneficial to you, but doing the push-pull method is going to help you burn more calories, because you're doing compound movements every workout versus a few days in there where you're only training abs, you're only training your arms, you're only training your shoulders, these smaller muscle groups that don't require that much energy to train really good. And then it also helps you to change things up. You know, chances are you're following a conventional or semi-conventional workout routine, and you might be training different muscle groups on different days. You know, maybe you're doing back and biceps, chest and triceps, shoulders and arms, legs and abs. And this is, you know, going to be a way for you to kind of get away from that and try a new thing, right? Change some things up. You know, and this, that in itself, you know, what can I do to change things up? What can I do to make better progress? What can I take, or what can I do to make better progress, is a question that I get a lot. You know, it's particularly like, what can I take to get better progress, to make better progress? And Steven asked me, what's your opinion on SARMs for weight loss and muscle gains? Now, this is a bit of a taboo area right now. Because some people are still like, oh, testosterone and steroids, like, oh, I don't know if we should talk about that. You know, and I see all the time on social media, people posting in groups like, I don't know if I can ask this question here, but I have a question about steroid use. And it's like, why wouldn't you be allowed to talk about that here? We should be talking about that kind of stuff. But anyway, what's my opinion on SARMs for weight loss and muscle gains? 100% transparency here on this one. I had done a 12-week cycle of Osterin, which is a SARM, and I think I saw some decent gains from it, and I don't think the gains left me afterwards, but I wouldn't do it again. I would not do it again, and I'm going to explain why I wouldn't do it again here in a minute. But you know what? First, I want to tell you, like, what is a SARM, right? Because you may not have ever even heard about a SARM, especially if you're not super into working out. Now, a SARM is a selective androgen receptor modulator, SARM, selective androgen receptor modulator, and it's intended to have the same kinds of effects as androgenic drugs, but be more selective in their actions, right? So, in particular, we have these androgen receptors in the body, okay? And these selective androgen receptor modulators will go into the body and attach to only specific androgen receptors and elicit a certain response from the body. But when you take an exogenous steroid, right, when you take an anabolic steroid, there's more than just one receptor, okay, in the steroid, we're saying. And so you have multiple androgen receptors being stimulated from, you know, one steroid, which can then lead to some of the bad side effects that come along with steroid use. Now, this use and study of SARMs started with pharma companies, And they were researching them as a method of medication for those who have a muscle wasting disease. And a muscle wasting disease is when your muscles just, they just go away. But the studies were not conclusive using SARMs. So certain SARMs were then thrown out. And then these quote-unquote supplement companies swiped up the formula or the chemical formulation or whatever you want to call it, and they started marking it based off a handful of studies on rats and other animals. And then now, even to go to the extent that the SARM that I had taken had listed on the bottle, not for human consumption. And I was putting it in my body. Look at that. All right, so what are androgen receptors? I went over it a little bit, but androgens are hormones, okay, such as testosterone. Testosterone is an androgen. And these hormones that we have in our body are important for normal bodily functions, right? Androgen receptors allow the body to respond to hormones that have been released when that hormone attaches to that androgen receptor, okay? So when you work out and you do some deadlifts and then your body releases growth hormone, that growth hormone attaches to an androgen receptor and then sends a certain signal to the body, okay? That's kind of how it works. Now, SARMs have androgen receptor specificity. And what does that mean? That means that this is all there's very little studies out on SARMs in general, but they can attach to specific androgen receptors. And when they attach to specific, very specific androgen receptors, this sends a very, very specific signal to the body, right? It's a tissue selective activation of androgenic signaling. I don't know why I wrote that in my notes, because it's basically exactly what I just said. But it sends a very specific signal to the body when you take these SARMs, okay? Now, SARMs are supposedly, mind you, that's a big word there, supposedly have no side effects like steroids do. But they also have not been around long enough for us to know any long-term side effects, 5, 10, 20 years. What happens if you take SARMs for 5 years? Nobody knows, because nobody's taken SARMs for 5 years or 10 or 20 years. You know, we see the side effects that happen with chronic testosterone use, you know, so at least we know what's going to, you know, going into it. Like if you're like, yeah, I'm just going to do some testosterone replacement therapy and you're not going to be careful about it. Well, at least you know where you're going. At least you know what you're going to do to your body and what you can look forward to. We don't know that about SARMs. That's why I'm super against using them. You know, there has been some promising results in preclinical trials, but we don't know the long-term safety. We don't know the tolerability studies. We don't know how, you know, what the efficacy really is. And all of these things are still necessary for me to feel comfortable to tell anybody that it might be a good idea to take a SARM. Okay. Yeah, I know I did it, right? I did it because I understand, and Steven, I'm speaking to you here. I understand where you're coming from, because I know why you're considering using SARMs. I know why. I get it, right? You feel like you've done everything that you can to lose the weight and to change your body, and you're having a very hard time. I get it, right? I've been there. I am there. I'm always there. Like, I understand, okay? Now, and I know it's very, very appealing to think that there's something like, oh, this was the missing key. All I have to do is take this, and I'm going to start to see gains. And unfortunately, you know, even if you take anabolic steroids, if everything else is not on point, you're not going to build muscle. You're not going to change your body. You know, you still have to put in the work in the gym when you're on anabolics. You still have to eat a certain way. You have to eat enough when you're taking anabolics. So, you know, just taking something, even anabolic steroids, which we know for 100% certainty will increase muscle size and burn body fat, you still have to put the work in. So what you're better off doing is focusing on your diet, getting that dialed in, focusing on your training, Is this the best way for you to be training for your body? And if you can't figure that out for yourself, get a friend, hire a trainer. You need to, you know, hire me. You need to hire somebody to help you, or you need to get somebody who's done it and who has the knowledge to be able to help you. Because until all of that stuff, until all of those ducks are in a row, there is no reason to even be considering anabolic steroids, and especially not SARMs. All right, the next question comes from Connor. And Connor says, how often should I train my abs if I'm trying to tone and lose weight in my core? All right, so training the core will do two things. And the two things that training the core will do depends on the exercises you choose to do. You can build the ab muscles, just like you can build the biceps or your chest or your glutes. You can build those muscles to be bigger. Or you can make the core better at stabilizing the spine. Because, you know, in the end, that's the job of the core, is to stabilize the spine. Because if we didn't have your core muscles around your spine to stabilize it, your spine would just fall. We would just all die because our spines would just fall over and we would be dead. So there's only two things you can do with the core when you train those muscles. So keep that in mind. You're not going to burn the belly fat in that area. You know, spot burning fat is a myth. You can do things to increase your core body temperature, but spot burning fat is a total myth. Now, what to do to help you tone the core for long-term results? You may not like this answer, but this is best for long-term results. If you're serious about changing and you want long-term results, this is what you got to do. First, start with your compound lifts, because these will boost your metabolism, help you burn calories hours after a workout, not just when you're doing a workout. It sends a big muscle building signal to the body, okay? Because you want to be sending that muscle building signal, because what that's going to do is tell your body, hey, to handle this stress, we need to build more muscle. And then in turn, after you build more muscle, your metabolism will increase, because muscle is a calorie expensive tissue. And then also it's going to help to release the most growth hormone and testosterone, which are exactly what you want to be released to be able to burn fat. Incorporate cardio. You know, I don't recommend any longer than 20 minutes of cardio. It doesn't have to be every day. I recommend 3 to 4 times a week. Okay. I definitely would not do 7 days a week of cardio, especially if you're doing longer than 20 minutes. But I would say 20 minutes of cardio at the most. Pair that with your resistance training. So just do 20 minutes of cardio before you go lift, and then go lift. You know, spend 20 minutes on the treadmill or the elliptical or whatever, and then go lift for another 40, 45 minutes. You want to calculate your macronutrients, because you have to find your caloric maintenance intake, your maintenance caloric intake, whatever. You have to find out how many calories you need to eat to maintain your weight. And I posted in the blog, if you go through the show notes, it's at the bottom, calculating your macronutrients 101. And that will walk you through how to find your maintenance. It's not something you can sit down and do. It's going to take you a week to 2 weeks to do. But after you plug in your own numbers and figure out where you might be, you can eat at that number for a while and watch what happens to your body weight and go from there. You want to eat at a slight deficit. Okay, so, or you want to let exercise put you in a deficit. Okay, you don't have to eat at this massive 500 calorie deficit. If you're exercising and your maintenance caloric intake is 2,500 calories and you're working out and you eat 2,500 calories and you do a workout, you are in a deficit. Okay, you're in a slight deficit, but you're in a deficit. And that's going to help you maintain for longer results. You want to focus on eating whole, natural, and unprocessed foods. I hope you have a notepad and you're taking notes, because this is a lot. Or just rewind a couple minutes so you can listen to it again and take notes. Focus on eating whole, natural, and unprocessed foods. You really want to avoid those highly palatable foods, because they kind of turn off that I'm full signal that your stomach tries to send to your brain, and you get that release of dopamine. And your body just starts to crave it, and you want more and more, and then it's just an endless positive feedback cycle. Finally, you want to have a well-rounded program, okay? You want to train your abs 2 to 3 times a week to build the muscles. You want to do a compound lift 2 to 3 times a week to maximize the muscle building and metabolism boosting results, and do cardio if you want to. It's not really necessary, but you can spend some time doing cardio. You know, and that comes down to personal preference. I have a new client, or not a new client, but I have a client who I've been training for a while, and he pretty much does no cardio at all, and we're doing a pretty darn good job at maintaining his body weight. But with that, thank you for listening to this episode of Drive with Woody Fit. If you like the show, if you enjoy what we're doing, please share it out on social media, share it with a friend, share it with a coworker. If any episode makes you think of somebody in your life, share that episode with them so that they may be able to benefit from any of the content that we're putting out. And then finally, if you want to get your hands on High Speed Anabolic, it will be released this week. In the next few days, it will be fully released. Lifetime access to the closed Facebook group, the High Speed Anabolic closed Facebook group, where we'll answer questions, do tutorials and whatnot. You get lifetime access for buying the program. It's pretty crazy. And then on top of that, if you want to get on to really elevate your fitness and start to make serious progress, we have custom programming available. Reach out to me or just head over to the website, executivefitllc.com. You'll be able to browse all of the different online personal training packages we have there. And without further ado, thank you. I'm done talking. My throat is dead. I'm so dry. And I'm going to go eat some dinner. So thanks for listening to this episode. You guys rock. Thank you for supporting the show. We love it. We absolutely love it. And next episode, Megan and Michael will be joining me. I finally got them, pulled them away from school. They're almost done, so they can finally come back and do another episode. I know some of you guys have been asking, you know, get Megan and Michael back on, but they've been really busy, so we're working on it. And the next episode after this one, Megan and Michael will be a part of. Hopefully, I hope I don't have to put my foot in my mouth for that again.